Being a teacher is tough. If only there were a book. Not one that tells them where to put their chalk. A book so great it can inspire a movement. There is one, and the people behind it are here. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From 9news.com in Denver, Colorado. I'm home. Former custodian starts a new job as school principal. Michael Atkins said a relationship he formed with a teacher at the age of 7 led him on a unique career path.
This is an awesome story, Bonnie.
I love this story.
Typically, we try to find a lot of pain or insanity, and that will come later.
Yeah, we'll have that in a little bit.
But this is a truly beautiful story. So a custodian to teacher's aide, to teacher, to principal. But even before that, though, the story of Michael Atkins begins with him playing on the playground at age 7 at the school he's now a principal at, right?
It just gives me chills. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's really cool.
It's wonderful. But even more, for me, and I think it's great to see somebody moving through all of those, you know, and it wouldn't have been easy to go from custodian to take a step into this next path to then become a teacher. It's a lot. Where do you get that inspiration? And this, to me, is the part of the story that I really love. And I think as a Busted Pencils listener, they're going to love this. A teacher in second grade is who Mr. Atkins, and let's call him Mr. Atkins, gives credit for where he is today.
And for him to recall that and remember talking to the teacher and saying, wow, now I know what I want to do.
Yeah.
It's such a cool story.
Yeah. And so, you know, as we're coming to the end of the school year, and we've talked about this a lot, I mean, teacher morale is really lagging out there, and I'm not going to deny that. But this story, if you're a teacher and school's out and you're wondering, can I even go back next year? You know what? Maybe you're in this position too, and you don't even know it, but there's a child that you worked with this year that you changed their life in this type of situation, right?
And this teacher didn't realize it till 30 years later. And that's the cool residual effect. Like you said, I don't think teachers realize it right off the bat because you don't get a thank you from a second grader saying, you were really nice and you made my world better. You don't get that.
No.
And to have that happen, it's just got to bring warmth to all teachers' hearts.
And so you think about it and go, yeah, this is the profession that you can have that effect. Truly, 30 years later, somebody comes back and says, because of you, I'm now a principal in a school. Started off in the desperate streets of a bad area of Denver.
Yeah.
And ends up a principal at the school in which he grew up next to. Teacher and Mr. Atkins, thank you for your service.
From WJHG.com in Tallahassee, Florida. Could armed teachers face charges for not pursuing threats?
Now, who would ask such a question?
A teacher with a gun, maybe?
Here we go in Florida. Thank you, Florida, for being there for us in Busted Pencils and constantly providing us stories of, you've got to be kidding me.
Right. Exactly. Of course it's Florida.
Love this, okay? Because the last time we talked, Florida was debating whether or not to arm teachers.
Correct.
Okay?
Yep.
That went through, no problem, and people said, yes, absolutely.
Give them guns,
okay?
Sure.
So now teachers are there. Now we've got a bit of a hiccup because there was a resource officer at Parkland the day of the mass shooting who, I don't know whatever happened, but according to people, didn't do his job. He had a gun. He should have been engaging the shooter. He didn't. He's now in trouble.
Well, here's my question. A resource officer.
Right.
That would be like a security officer in the school?
Well, here in Madison, Wisconsin, in Madison, a school resource officer is actually a police officer.
Okay. So that's somebody that has been trained with a gun,
trained with security. Right.
This isn't somebody teaching history.
Right.
It's not. Okay. So if they can bring a resource officer that was trained for this up on charges?
Right.
What do they expect the teachers to do?
And that's the fear, right? The question here is now I'm a teacher, now I have a gun, and a mass shooter walks in. My job is now to shoot this person, protect the children, do both.
Do both.
Or what? What is it? Because, right. And if I, quote, lock the door and protect my children, can I be brought up on charges for not engaging the shooter?
Correct.
Right.
Right.
You know?
Or do you have to pull out a sheet saying, okay, he's 30 feet away.
Right.
So this one, that, since I do this.
30 feet away means engage. 31 feet away means I don't engage.
Right.
Okay, rules of engagement.
Rules of engagement.
For teachers. So on top of everything else, now I have to have rules of engagement for women. So I just see this one Rambo teacher out there, though, going, okay, kids, here's the deal. Lock the door behind me. Don't let me back in no matter what. I'm going down to take out this shooter because I don't want to get in trouble.
Right. Exactly. Right. Stay here, kids. You'll be fine.
Yeah, you know, and it's just like, yes, here again, but it's a reasonable question for teachers. So crazy Florida, now that you passed the law that allows teachers to have guns, and now you're charging a resource officer who had a gun for not protecting kids in a mass shooting, how many teachers are going to be willing to actually say, yeah, I think I'm going to carry a gun and be concerned about whether or not I'm going to be brought up on charges if I don't engage an active shooter? Florida, you're silly.
Hey, this is Tim from Rise Against here on Busted Pencils Radio.
He taught English and journalism to high school students in Paterson, New Jersey for 30 years. He is an editor of Rethinking Schools magazine and a co-editor of the New Teacher book. Joining him is a high school chemistry teacher from East Orange, New Jersey, co-founder of MAPSCO Freedom School, a local community organization committed to education justice and organizing teachers, students, and parents. Welcome to the show, Ike Chukwu Onyema and Stan Karp, both Rethinking Schools contributors and editors to the New Teacher book. Welcome, fellas.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Gets a little bit crazy here, all right? So both of you, though, we're going to jump right into this. The New Teacher book, however, I want to throw this out there. It's the third edition of the New Teacher book. When we do the third edition, can we still call it new?
Well, I think we can because the New Teacher book refers to who the audience for the book was and is. The New Teacher book has been a staple in the Rethinking Schools catalog of curriculum and policy books since the first edition was published in 2004. A second edition was published in 2010. But when we went to review it, to republish it, because it's always been a very good seller, we realized that the landscape of public education had changed dramatically since 2010.
Right.
And that while there were still many valuable things in the book, we needed a fresh look, and we also needed some fresh voices from a new generation of teachers.
And that's the reality here. I know we're just playing around a little bit with that, but when we say new teacher book, we're talking about new teachers and Rethinking Schools taking on this idea of looking at new teachers and giving them something other than classroom management, prep tools, and ideas about how to take care of all those other things. We've got a real book here for new teachers that talks about real issues. And EK, you are, when you first got involved with this, would you consider yourself a new teacher?
Well, I was in the fifth year of my teaching career, so I think I maybe had just passed that cusp from where we normally expect the precipitous drop in the amount of teachers who hang around for the profession. So I was right on that borderline, I would say.
Right, you stayed there. Now, so a contributor, but I want to go back to Stan. Stan, you've been a long time editor there at Rethinking Schools, and we were talking about this is the third edition, and in fact the second edition in 2010. Between 2010 and 2019, there's been a lot of change. But first, let's really ask the question: new teacher book, what's in it? Why do new teachers want to get this book?
Well, I guess that term is early career teachers sometimes, as EK refers to. One of the things that we wanted to do here is make sure that we had more of the voices of new teachers and early career teachers. So with some funding support from the National Education Association, we began this project of producing the new book and determining what it should include, what we should keep, and what we should change, with 2 3-day retreats of early career teachers in the summer of 2017. One of these was in Milwaukee, one was in Portland. We had about 40 early career educators come from 7 states. More than 2/3 were women. More than 2/3 were people of color. They came from many diverse backgrounds, grade levels, and subjects. And we had 2 goals. We wanted to really unpack what it meant to do critical teaching for social justice. What were the goals and practice of such an approach to classroom teaching? And also to take a critical look at the second edition, and with a view towards producing a significantly revised and updated edition. And EK was one of the 12 teachers who came from New Jersey and went to the retreat in Portland. So maybe he could describe a little bit about what his experience was there.
EK, so you went to Portland for this retreat. I mean, so what are they asking you to do? What was your, you know, contributing there as that group to saying, okay, here's what, from a stance at a social justice critical point of view, here's what we need to be including in this updated version?
Yeah, so the invitation to come out to Portland for this retreat was really quite fantastic. And when I wasn't trying rock climbing for the first time or trying out cornbread-flavored ice cream, we were actually deconstructing the book in groups, combing through the table of content, picking out, you know, which chapters we thought were, you know, the most relevant. There was also a significant portion dedicated to writing at this retreat. And it was probably my first time in a room with teachers all committed to writing, sharing each other's pieces, giving each other feedback, you know, using model pieces that had already been published to inform our writing and to inform our criticism of what we created, and just, you know, phenomenal discussions about what ought to be the book and what we could, you know, safely recommend removing or revamping from a new lens or a new voice.
So we have the new book now. It's the 3rd edition, and, you know, go through it here. And, you know, both of you can jump in at any one point, but, you know, obviously we're not going to go point by point, author by author, but it's, you know, you've got a nice organization. And so chapter one or part one is Starting Strong. What's a little glimpse of what I'm going to get through reading all of these author teachers' perspectives?
Well, Starting Strong is about creating community in the classroom, creating the kind of spaces that both support and recognize students and give them the kind of confidence and space they need to take risks on their education and to really create a classroom in which there's a community of support for serious intellectual and personal growth. It also focuses on survival strategies for those early years, which can be extremely difficult and overwhelming.
Well, extremely difficult and overwhelming. I was thinking as I go through this book and I look at this, and so you brought it up now. I was going to save it for later, Stan and EK, but isn't it, it's already hard as a first-year teacher. When I look at this book, you're from Rethinking Schools, this new teacher book, social justice, community, all of these things. How is it that I'm not going to be overwhelmed with just the plain old survival aspect, let alone teaching for social justice?
You know, Tim, that's a great question. As early career teachers and first year teachers, our number one goal sometimes is to survive the school day, to make it home and return the next day. So in many ways, you are correct. But the importance of this book, I think, lies in underscoring the purpose for why we entered the profession in the first place. We didn't come here just merely to survive. We came here with much grander ideas. We want our students to thrive. We want to impact the world in different kinds of ways. So this book is a really healthy reminder. And I think, you know, it thinks about things from the long-term range rather than the short-term of just here's how you survive the next day. It's, you know, here's how you can impact the world. Here are some strategies on how to do that. So even if you're struggling in those first few years, you know, it could eventually look like this. So hang in there.
Well, and I think that's empowering. Stan, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think those are good points. And I think just as the book opens with talking about creating community for students in classrooms, it's also about creating a professional community of support and engagement for yourself. And, you know, one of the reasons teachers go into teaching is to do social justice work. And they're often pointed in more narrow way, directions from the kind of preparation they get in teacher ed programs, and also from the kind of narrow curriculum that's often driven by other considerations than social justice when they get to school. So I think a lot of the teachers who came to the retreat were looking for resources, examples of how other teachers had approached this, and a community and a kind of reservoir of resources to sustain a career in teaching for social justice long beyond that first year.
Hey, I will just say I take offense to teacher prep programs because I know at least one in Madison, Wisconsin at a college called Edgewood College where we talk about social justice quite frequently. But I know we're the exception. But chapter two, in fact, teaching for social justice. What's the reader looking at there?
In that chapter, it focuses on curriculum and pedagogical strategies for centering social justice in your teaching. The opening essay in that chapter is actually a classic statement by Rethinking Schools about what the elements of social justice teaching are, about how to ground classrooms in the lives of students, how to introduce elements of critical, multicultural, anti-racist, pro-justice, and very participatory, experiential, hopeful, all the kinds of things that can not only, as you say, overwhelm people with the expectations, but actually motivate people with possibility and also be very student-centered. You know, this is not about being at the front of the classroom and lecturing. This is about engaging students in academically meaningful and rigorous work that really opens up the possibilities. So there's a lot of nuts and bolts about how to do such a kind of pedagogy and the kind of resources teachers need to create their own curriculum and not simply implement somebody else's.
See, I think that's a really critical point, Stan and Ike. I'll let you jump in here. But to point out, you know, the idea when you talk about teaching social justice, yeah, first of all, it's overwhelming. But again, you know, I do think it's empowering. But then what we're looking at in this chapter, though, you've actually gone and said taking this sometimes amorphous, incredibly challenging role as a first-year teacher to think that I might be, or a new teacher, whatever a new teacher means, social justice. But here it is, nuts and bolts. Here it is. Here's how you might do it. Here's what it might look like. EK, what do you think? Is that too far off the mark? Or
Not at all. Okay. In fact, Tim, I just wanted to add that often social justice teaching is framed as an imperative for teachers of the humanities, be it, you know, social studies or English. But in this chapter, there's a really, really important article, or chapter rather, entitled Medical Apartheid, Teaching the Tuskegee Syphilis Study, written by a biology teacher. And she just does an amazing job of drawing the connections between the relevance of that history and the current curriculum content that she has to teach. So this book is, you know, in addition to being powerful, it deals with all of the subjects. It's not just for English teachers. It's not just for history teachers.
I like that part because too often, you said, hey, the social studies teacher will take care of that. And, you know, the idea that social justice only occurs in that, and the great example in science. And you know, even people talk about math, and we can talk about math in different ways. But let's get on to chapter three, challenges and opportunities. So, Stan, what's happening here?
So this chapter is mostly about addressing the issues of race, class, gender, and difference, with not only with our students, but also with our colleagues. And again, in all these chapters, there's not only some great voices of experience and some tremendous guidance from experienced and successful teachers, but also the voices of early career teachers themselves and how they both struggled with and learned from both successes and failures and are still learning. There's one of my favorite pieces in the book is by a teacher who was supporting his transgender students by helping them provide some really challenging professional development to staff about pronoun use and why it matters and what it means to make vulnerable, often marginalized students visible. So this and another article that made a big impression was one about bringing up issues of race and gender with colleagues who may not share your social justice perspectives and why that's both important and why that's also difficult to do. So challenges and opportunities are everywhere, and this chapter is about dealing with some of them.
Ike, anything to add to that?
Yeah, so two of the authors actually in this particular section of the book are authors that I met. Let me actually change that. Three of the authors. So it's just so awesome to see folks whose pieces that I might have seen earlier drafts of and then to read the final drafts. And just, you know, it reminds me of the journey of, coming together on Saturday mornings or Saturday afternoons hosted by Stan sometimes and throughout. Just giving each other this loving, critical feedback throughout. It just reminds me of the camaraderie that was built in the construction of this book. But in addition to the themes that Stan has mentioned, all of which are tremendously important, race, gender issues, class issues, some of which I'm still learning about, you know. In fact, Mikhail Daish, on behalf of their name, using they, them pronouns because they need us to, is, great content. And I learned so much from what he wrote.
Well, and
Tim, sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to mention one of the things that, happened between the retreats and the finished product we're talking about is that there were writing groups for about a year and a half in Portland, Milwaukee, and New Jersey, where teachers did come together and do exactly as EK described, support each other, brainstorm ideas, critically respond to each other's pieces, as well as other pieces that were submitted. So the process of building some kind of community and some kind of, this is not work that you can do in isolation. It's not work that can be accomplished by superhumans or super teachers. This is about creating community to support the kinds of teaching we would like to see in our schools.
That's a theme that I keep hearing running through this, whether it's the process of putting the book together and whether it's the message in the book, that if we're going to take on this work, that we need a community. And in fact, I think, when we're doing really hard work, support wherever we can find it is going to be out there. And so, keep putting that forward. Now, chapter 4, measuring what works or what matters, and this is probably my favorite chapter because I am absolutely convinced that we have measured what doesn't matter for way too long.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree more. I'll just say that it's wonderful that this section of the book follows the social justice issues section, the challenges and the opportunities in social justice, because I think sometimes folks hear teachers who have centered that as their priority in the classroom, and they think, well, how do we hold them accountable? Are they even interested in accountability? How are they measuring their success? And this chapter is so important because not only does it, critically just, destroy the myths around the importance of standardized testing and kind of carefully, analyze what's wrong with them. We also talk about, teacher quality and, a more serious and collaborative approach to teacher evaluation, authored actually by our Stan Karp on the phone now. So it's just, just one of my favorite sections as well in the book.
Yeah, Stan?
I think what we tried to do in this chapter is put out the critique you mentioned, Tim, of the testing machine and how that fuels corporate reform in classrooms and schools, but also to provide alternatives, assessment strategies that actually support better teaching, that support professional growth, that actually at the school, district, and even the state level can promote better practices. And also to, honor the concern that parents have and communities have to hold schools accountable for the communities they serve, and to have assessment be transparent and collaborative in a way that really, you know, does make visible what is happening at schools and how kids are progressing or not progressing and what's working. So it's not simply about confronting the testing machine, which it is, but it's also about finding alternatives to it.
Well, and that, yeah, and I think that's really important because both EK said this and then Stan to reemphasize, you know, it's not, nobody's against making sure that students are, quote, learning. It's the idea of punitive that has come down, particularly in the last 20 years and even since, you know, A Nation at Risk, we've been battling this whole idea that everything is a quantitative measure that in the end is, you know, beaten over the heads of public school teachers, public school children, public schools, for that fact. And so the idea here is to not argue, quote, against measuring or assessing true learning. It's to say, let's go at it. And in fact, from a social justice frame, it would require us to move way beyond simple numeric measurements. Chapter 5, Beyond the Classroom. EK, you have a chapter in here, but Stan, quick overview, and then we're going to do a little bit of a deeper dive with EK's with his little part.
Sure. EK's article is a great example here of how teachers are walking into a much different political and professional landscape than I did many years ago when I started my career. And this chapter tries to address some of those hot-button issues, charters, vouchers, school funding, as well as solutions like community schools and parent-teacher community collaboration, which is a theme of EK's piece. And also, one of the unique factors of features of the book is that it addresses in some depth teacher unions. A lot of new teacher books do not deal with teacher unions, and a lot of new teachers experience unions as very removed from them. But teacher unions, for all their problems and for all their complications, need to be teacher organizations. And some of those discussions are in this book, including the part of the discussion in EK's piece.
Yeah, so EK, your piece, you know, from outrage to organizing, building community ties through education activism. So just give us a little snapshot.
Yeah, so I've been blessed again to be a co-founder with some other amazing educators in my area of a nonprofit called MAPSO Freedom School. We actually got started in response to an incident of police brutality in our community, and we wanted to respond in a way that honored the traditions of, you know, collective community organizing, you know, rather than, you know, just kind of going about it in a singular kind of fashion, as if we had all the answers. So we brought students, parents, as well as teachers together in response to that with a teach-in. And from there, we kind of morphed, honestly, into more professional development opportunities for teachers. We've had some programs for students and parents. And in the process of doing that work, I found that this was also a great opportunity to collaborate with our teachers union here in New Jersey. So for one of our events, for example, we were able to put on an EdCamp styled conference, or rather I should call it an unconference, around the theme of revolution, you know, EdCamp revolution, EdCamp revolt, just to bring some more social justice themes into that kind of a space. And the union was, you know, very helpful in funding some of our work, and this has been true for other conferences that we've put on ever since then. So, you know, whereas I've encountered some challenges, some complications in the teachers union, I realized that there are ways that, you know, we can certainly collaborate to achieve the kind of results that, you know, we're trying to get on the ground.
And I think that's really important to, I mean, Stan kind of started it, and EK, your the experience here, and in fact, the way you detail that, but to not forget that our unions are out there, and that, hey, occasionally, maybe sometimes it's us as teachers that might need to remind them that they themselves also need to help us with some of these things. And it sounds, you know, it's, again, a community, a collaboration, and so putting this piece in about the unions, talking about the unions is a powerful piece. Stan, when I buy this book, I'm a new teacher. do I start at the beginning and read front to back, or do I dive in where I find myself interested?
Well, if you're a new teacher and you buy this book, you probably don't have time to sit down and read any book from beginning to end. And so you're going to be looking for to pick and choose what speaks to your particular either need in what you're trying to create in terms of classroom or lessons, or you're speaking to a particular problem that you know would like to get somebody else's experience or some words of wisdom about. And I think one of the things that's so useful about this book is this combination of new teacher voices and hard-earned wisdom. And so I think depending on what it is you're struggling with at the moment, you would definitely pick and choose and find a lot to work with.
EK, if you were going to give this book to somebody, who would you pick?
Ooh, who would I pick to anybody?
Yeah.
Man. Oh, wow. You're giving me way too much freedom. I'm not used to that. I'd give it to any teacher, really at any stage of their career. You know, it's being billed as a book for new teachers, but, you know, there are a lot of mid-career, even late-career teachers who would definitely benefit from this. And I just hope that it can be read, you know, not just in isolation or by individuals, but also in collectives, because I think that the ultimate purpose is action, and some of the best action, you know, exemplified through organizing or even unions, is collective action. So I would actually hope to give it to a group of teachers who would then, you know, find ways to take action from it, you know, however they're inspired to do so.
Well, and I'm going to put this out there as a Busted Pencils challenge for the education leaders out there that are listening. Your teachers might want this book, and I have a feeling that Stan, where would, if I'm a principal or a superintendent and I want to buy this book for my teachers, where would I go?
You would go to rethinkingschools.org and then connect with Missy Zombor, who is the marketing and circulation director for Rethinking Schools Books. And you can find the contact information there, including some significant discounts for bulk purchases. So that would be just a wonderful thing for your teachers and also a good way to support Rethinking Schools.
Well, there you go, principals. There you go, superintendents. Busted Pencils Challenge out there. It's the new teacher book. It's the third edition. Ike Chukwu Anyema, Stan Karp, or Ike and Stan, thanks for Busting Pencils.
Time now for our weekly salute to legendary historian and activist Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn.
That chain of relationships made me think of how connections are made. You read a book, you have a single experience, and your life is changed in some way. No act, therefore, however small, should be dismissed or ignored.
My thanks to Stan and EK from Rethinking Schools. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Thanks for Busting Pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.